Mini episode 107 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by TV Howl, your home on the web for coverage of today's television scene and a look at the history of the medium as covered by big-time TV critic Adam Buckman. Follow them on the web at tvhowl.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 107. We've got a great one for you here today. Rick Morris, along with another one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries. I'll be setting up the introduction for him right about now. Good friend of ours, longtime golf contributor to the FDH Lounge, and somebody who is in the process of setting up his own unique special brand. You can follow him presently on Twitter, at Mr. Flatstick. He is coming on with us here today to give the preview for the Masters, which, of course, takes place later this week. And towards the end, we'll touch a little bit on the subsequent majors this year in the world of golf. We've been tracking with him over the course of the last 18 months or so on the program. Just what a unique, what a very special time this is in the world of golf, with so many great young players coming along, depth in the game that seemingly has kind of come out of nowhere. Maybe not to guys like Mr. Flatstick who've been following it, but for the rest of us, what's happened over the course of the last 2 years or so, I think, has been a really kind of pleasant surprise when you look at the landscape of the game and the way that a lot of these guys have come along. Rory McIlroy is, of course, the first one that springs to mind, but there's a lot of other great young players right now as well, some of whom have already captured their first major. And by the way, and we have up also at the fdhlounge.blogspot.com, where, of course, this episode is located. So if you're checking it out now, that means that you know where to go for this other stuff. The preview for the Masters from Mr. Flatstick, as well as his rankings of players going into the Masters this weekend, how he sees everything setting up. So with all that having been said, I can only be speaking of my longtime friend, our FDH golf correspondent, Mr. Flatstick himself, Tom Denk.
Well, Rick,
Denver, how you doing, my friend? How are you tonight?
Oh, we're doing great. Episode 107 of the FDH Lounge. It's always a privilege. You're a wonderful friend. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, thank you so much, my friend. I tell you what, I have to start here on a note before we get to any of the other serious stuff for this weekend here. I have a feeling this guy is pimping you. A longtime mutual friend and FDH Lounge dignitary, John Adams, said that I should start by asking you about Ricky Fowler's chances for victory this weekend.
Oh, John is a big Ricky fan. John's like a lot of avid golfers in the United States, middle-aged and trying to desperately cling on to their youth by dressing like Ricky Fowler in his bright orange suit. So I admire his enthusiasm, but John actually knows a good bit of golf, so he's a smart guy. He's on Team Ricky Fowler, that's for sure.
He is, and Ricky is not looking that high in your rankings here. I don't think we'll be talking very much about him. So at number 47, as I scan down on the chances for victory this weekend here, but it's interesting because in just looking at from a macro level here, the perspective of a lot of people heading into this weekend, and I don't know the extent to which CBS is going to be hyping it. I would guess that it would be. There's a real strong angle right now of Tiger Woods v. Rory McIlroy, because we've seen Rory come along in the last year to year and a half as this sort of proto-Tiger, the young version of him, as many people see him. And that's oversimplifying, but he is the biggest young phenomenon since Tiger. And a sense now that with Woods' victory at Bay Hill, that he finally perhaps is rounding back into form. So to the extent to which that's going to be a big media storyline, how do you see it playing out in reality this weekend?
Well, that is the big story, and rightfully so. The Masters, because previous winners get to come back, because it is a limited-size invitational, because the nature of the course transcends It really, you know, makes the players have a complete game and also rewards some of the longer hitters. A lot of the titles, the majority of them are cannibalized by the dominant players of their era. Nicklaus, Palmer, Gary Player, Nick Faldo, you know, Tom Watson had several, Seve Ballesteros. So these guys, definitely, when they are the number one player in the world, and you know, even Phil Mickelson, you know, you see these guys chew up a lot of the titles and they leave the scraps for the other players. So in this case, we have, you know, the man, Tiger Woods, you know, four-time champ, and Rory McIlroy, who's, you know, been over the last year probably considered the best player alive. So, yeah, these two guys, I don't think it's fair change. And in all this, you have Phil Mickelson, who's, you know, looked alive this year, and he's won three of the last eight Masters. So Tiger has come in no worse than sixth in his last six Masters. And you have Phil, who's won three of the last eight. So Phil's, he's not even allowed in the conversation with a lot of the Rory v. Tiger hype. But it's really a three-headed dog. I think if you were an odds maker and I said, you know, you can have Tiger, Phil, and Rory, and I get the other 93 players in the field, you would lose a lot of money, I believe, if you said 50-50 on those three players. I would say those three guys are probably about a 60-65% chance of winning this week, and everyone else has about a third combined. So right or wrong, I mean, I really feel that's, given that the big players win, you know, a pretty good chunk of the Masters titles, I feel that's how it lays out.
Interesting. So if this were a fantasy draft board, essentially there would be a big line being drawn underneath those three. That represents your solid first tier, in other words.
Yeah, if you know someone that says, Tiger and Phil, you know, you got to give them the business. You can't let them take both. And what's really great is they each, you know, nobody's a Tiger guy and a Phil guy. You know, it's not really a Tiger guy and a Rory guy. You know, some guys might like Rory, but if they're a Phil guy, they're not getting off the Phil bandwagon. It's kind of three camps, you know, globally. And, you know, even in the crowds, though, people are going to respect Rory for kind of, you know, owning up to, you know, his dismal performance on the back nine last year where he ended up with an 80. But he's not going to be the favorite if he gets in a head-to-head matchup, I think, with Tiger or Phil. I mean, the people that, you know, I mean, there's a big there's a lot of people out there that just are never going to be Tiger Woods fans. They maybe never were, and, you know, the things that went on with his personal life, they're never going to be. But they're not at the tournaments. Generally, if you go out to these pro tournaments, the people that are following Tiger Woods' group they're largely pro-Tiger, and they are into it. So if Tiger's making a move, you know, his people are going to be there, his fans are going to be there, letting the crowd and let the other guys in the field know who's making birdies. And the same thing with Phil. I mean, three of the last eight, you know, and Phil's got a lot of, you know, built up a lot of goodwill over the years with just being a gregarious guy, signing a lot of autographs. You can't really deny that plays into him being a fan favorite. So, you know, best case for Rory would be for him to be in one of the last two groups and for him to have both of those guys in front of him, meaning Tiger and Phil would be in the clubhouse, maybe two or three groups ahead of him. He knows where he needs to stand, and then he can make it happen. I think if he's in the final pairing with one of those guys and it's all tied, despite his undeniable popularity, I think he would definitely be the number three favorite out of those three guys in the field. So that's, you know, the fan and the momentum side of it. And then you got to have to look at the tactical side of it. The one thing that Tiger has, and I mentioned this in my preview, is he has that PhD in, you know, psychological warfare, where he's going to pull out everything that he has. And now that his game's a little bit better than when it's been the past 24 months, you know, he brings that full package, and, you know, it's go time for him. There's no more. He's, you know, he's gone a couple years now with no major. This is the time he needs to make it happen. He knows that. Everybody knows that. So if we thought Tiger was ruthless on the course before, I think it's even going to be more so now. And, you know, God forbid the guy at CBS who's going to have to interview him at 18 at the end of this year if he doesn't get it done. So I think he's going to do that. And then, you know, Phil's experience. Phil, you know, was neck and neck there a few years ago when he outdueled Lee Westwood. He's proven that he can get it done when it all counts there at Augusta. So really, if, you know, one of those guys is into it with with Rory, you'd have to give them, you know, they own the jackets. You know, Rory will probably get his, but they own them. So, as lovable as Rory McIlroy is, I think if it's head-to-head and one of those guys versus Rory, you got to give it to Phil or Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, these scenarios you're talking about, if it's two or, God willing, even three of them towards the top of the leaderboard this weekend, it's going to be one of the most memorable Masters, I think, in a long time, that back nine on Sunday. There's no doubt about that. What's interesting about Rory is, although he's the youngest of the bunch, clearly the least experienced by a long shot, what he's already done, what he did last year in the first two majors, really evoke echoes of history from some very famous points in history. What he did in the U.S. Open, that runaway victory, very reminiscent of what Tiger did in the Masters in 97, maybe the U.S. Open in 2000, the way that Tiger lapped the field in some of his most dominant wins. But prior to that, and you alluded to it, what happened at the Masters, that breakdown that he had going from leading the thing to, I believe, ultimately shooting an 80 on his last day, very reminiscent at that point in time of Greg Norman, who, of course, had the talent to be the guy to bridge the era of Nicholas and the era of Tiger Woods, but ultimately didn't have the game in the majors, the medal game or whatever, to get it done. So Rory McIlroy, for a very thin resume based on experience, has already, again, just evoked some of the most famous moments in golf history from what he's already done.
Yeah, you know, I really see with Rory, because I hate to say anyone's going to win 7 majors, 10 majors. You can't determine that. What I think you would definitely see, a lot of people like to put him up there with the future greats. I see maybe more of a Seve Ballesteros career, where he is just this lightning rod for maybe 5 to 7 years, because he is just up in, you know, he's in every tournament, he's up in the mix. So I think that would be more of a fair comparison, where, hey, you're going to have this window of 5 to 7 years maybe with his youth, and you're going to see some electrifying things. With the Augusta tournament last year in the U.S. Open, I believe he was leading on the back nine in, I think, all 8 of those tournaments at one point. At least when he teed off on the 10th tee, he was the leader for like all 8 of those rounds. And if you go back to the 2010 PGA, and when they played, in another major in 2010, he, you know, this is 4 or 5 out of the past, 6, 7 majors where he's been in the dog eat dog battle. So, you know, he's electrifying. I think we're all just reaching a little bit if we already want to put him next to, you know, anything more than a few majors for any of these guys. Boy, you know, it's nice to wish for, but, you know, Fred Couples looked like a shoe-in, and then one snap at the back on the range, Davis Love had the sweetest swing in the game for a lot of years, and that got one major. So do I think Rory, given what he's shown at this point, will do better than that? Yeah, but, let's let it happen. You know, let's let him get one at Augusta. Put him halfway to the Grand Slam. You know, he's proven that he can play links golf. You know, the PGA, he's proven he can win on the PGA Tour. You know, he just needs to rack up wins. So, you know, you don't get to 3 until you get to 2. So, you know, let's see it. You know, let's see it. Because that's the one thing for him, is he just, you know, he went from a point where he was, you know, having good tournaments and winning one. Now he's, in the top 5 every tournament, and now he added another win. So let's just see, you know, if he can just start racking up the wins, and go from there.
Well, one of the things also, and we've talked about this previously, and going back to the first time we started breaking this down with you on the show in the summer of 2010, that was when this storyline of recent years really began to be apparent, this incredible emergence of talent on the tour here. And what Rory's going to be facing, you and I have talked about this previously, and I think it's only become more apparent as we've gone along, is that he's going to be facing obstacles that Tiger Woods never had, because you did not have longevity with David Duval, even with Ernie Els and with Retief Goosen. They won a couple of majors, but we were all wondering who was going to be 1A to Tiger Woods. And I guess eventually, once Phil Mickelson stopped having as many problems in the majors, he did. But you're really almost reaching to kind of put Phil on the same level as Tiger, versus there may be a real amount of parity. I'm looking at your top 25 rankings here for this Masters tournament. I'm seeing a couple of guys on here who've already won some majors, some young guys.
Number 13,
Charles Schwartzel, 15, Graham McDowell, 18, Martin Keimer. That's not even counting 21, Jason Day, who's always in the mix at these things. Louis Oosthuizen, 25, Adam Scott, 26, who has yet to bring in a major. So really, this field of guys all together, you know, it might be the young guy at the head of it here, but boy, I mean, he's going to have more competition in years to come, it seems to me, than Tiger did.
Yeah, a big hat tip to the NBC research team. When Tiger was walking up the 18th at Bay Hill, they flashed a stat. I had to write it down immediately. They said, since Tiger Woods had won at the BMW Championship at the fall of 2009, there had been 108 PGA tournaments. That's just the PGA Tour, not even including the Euro PGA Tour. And there were 78 different winners.
Wow.
First time, you know, so that's 78 winners, and a lot of guys got those first wins. They got their second wins. So a lot of guys were tasting victory. You know, Tiger Woods could have, you know, he's popping off, you know, 4 or 5 years. That could have been another 15 to 16 guys, you know, at least, you know, that never got a chance in the winner's circle. So, guy, you know, there's a lot of guys that have got a taste of success. And I think, you know, you've seen in the World Golf Classics, you know, with Hunter Mahan. You know, you've seen some of these other guys, you know, really step forward. So, if anything, you know, and this is the Tiger Woods generation. You know, Rory's the first guy to say, hey, you know, I'm out there putting to beat Tiger Woods. So this is really that world class from, you know, all the different continents, you know, coming out to play. And, you know, the one thing is, and we're going to, you know, is these guys make a little bit more money, which you're seeing some of them, you know, there's young guys out there that say, hey, after a few victories, I want to start focusing on the majors more. Like a great player like Jeff Ogilvie, you know, he's won a number of times on the tour. He's already won the U.S. Open, said, you know what, I'm going to start tailoring my schedule around the majors. You know, in the old days, guys just needed, you know, that was a luxury Jack Nicklaus had where he could say, oh, I'm going to build around 4 tournaments a year. Well, you know what, you know, the smaller PGA stops, you know, those pay the bills. You know, that money spends just as good. So, but now you see like a guy like Keegan Bradley won the PGA last year. He, you know, you hear him chiming in. Well, you know, I already want to get into Augusta. I want to make as many trips down there as possible. You know, in the old days when the tour stops, you know, weren't paying as much and there wasn't so much money, there was none of these 3 and 4 or 5 scouting trips to Augusta National and, you know, on the bye weeks to, you know, get a grip of the course. So that's one thing where I think is some of these young guys, you know, even taking scouting trips to Augusta National, being like a first-time arrival, isn't necessarily a barrier to success the way it, say, was when Fuzzy Zeller won in 1979 when he was the last guy to win on his first trip to Augusta. So, you know, there's a lot of factors where these young guys, you know, they're better battle-tested. You know, the bar athletically has changed. You know, these guys are, you know, I mean, look at Rory. He went from a little pipsqueak, added, you know, 10, 15 pounds of muscle between the shoulders. You know, that's going to help his back. You know, better, less injuries. You know, better condition, better stamina. You know, these guys are armed to the gills. They're not coming in. You know, you look at a guy like Kyle Stanley, who's already won this year. You know, this guy's, you know, got a night range where he's hitting balls at night. So there's a whole slew of young animals out there ready to, you know, take their crack at it. So I think in the last 3 years, you know, it hasn't been so much. Tiger's been gone, but, you know, those years, those, the casual fan considered those lean years. Well, I mean, you just built up a lot of currency because now you got an extra 60 guys out there who've gotten their first and second and third wins, and, you know, they're ready to ball.
Well, you know, you look at it too, Tom, and I would say that this is parity in the good sense. There was, in the time between Nicklaus and Woods, I remember there being a lot of parity, I think, born of mediocrity, because you really didn't have too many. You would have a nice stretch there for Nick Price. Faldo had a nice run on and off over a period of years, but it was more so like anybody could win because nobody was really transcendent. And it's probably early to call any of these guys transcendent, even Rory, at this stage of his career. But what makes it even more fascinating to me is you got the young bucks that have already won or are on the verge of winning. You know, like as I said, Jason Day before, he strikes me as somebody that's on the verge, Brant Snedeker, some of these other guys, Bubba Watson, as I'm looking at your rankings, but also guys who are at a point in their career where they're going to get that one, not necessarily the ceremonial one to top off their career, but it does sort of look that way in the history books. You look at last year with Darren Clark finally winning a major, and you look at it, and there's a couple more guys here, too. People are wondering when Luke Donald is going to reel one in. People are wondering about Steve Stricker. So what's fascinating is it's not just the young guns. It could be a guy who's had a long, great career who goes for his crowning moment this weekend at Augusta.
Yeah, there's some guys out there, like, say, for instance, Mark Wilson. Mark Wilson's got 5 PGA Tour victories. You know, there are very few players. There's maybe only, you know, 5 to 10 players who have, you know, active, you know, over five PGA Tour victories. Most of the guys have between 1 and 5. And the guys that have 5, they're not winning anymore. Vijay Singh hasn't won in a while. You know, Ernie Els really hasn't won in a while. That's why he's not even in the tournament. You know, so you got guys like Mark Wilson, you know, who are just, tremendous, you know, iron play. Mark Wilson was in the Final Four at the Tucson match play, the Accenture. You know, he's a great player. He's into that prime where, you know, compared to Rory and Jason Day and, you know, Nick Watney and some of these younger fellas, he seems like he's old, but he's in the middle 30s. That used to be when a lot of these guys started chipping off all their wins and their majors. But, you know, he seems like a little bit old. So you got, you know, guys got like him out there, like a Matt Kuchar. Although I don't think his, like, really his putting and his chipping can really match up. You know, KJ Choi, who's, you know, really one of the best, you know, tee to green players out there. You know, I couldn't say he couldn't do it. You know, a guy like Zach Johnson's already won once. You know, he's probably better in, the worse the conditions are, I think it would help Zach Johnson out. But, you know, he's no slouch. He's got a number of, you know, PGA Tour wins. A guy like Rory Sabatini, who's won a number of times. So there's guys out there that, you know, are definitely in their, you know, mid to late 30s who, yeah, you want to talk only about the young guys, but, you know, Jonathan Berg, he challenged Jim Furyk at Olympia Fields in Chicago at the U.S. Open. Now, there's a lot of these guys that have won on tour the last few years. You just can't write them off. You know, I saw a thing like Jason Duffner. He was in the playoff with Keegan Bradley at the PGA last year. He's had a number of top 20s and a few top 10s this year. He was listed on one site at like 125-1. So, you know, I really couldn't agree with that at all. I mean, I realize he hasn't won, but, you know, the guy was in a playoff for the PGA and has played well this year. So, you know, it's loaded for bear, and I think, you know, let's put it simply, the last 12 majors have been won by 12 different individuals. I guess you're kind of making we're all kind of making a leap to assume that it's going to be, you know, a repeat performer. You know, it's not really the case, though.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, it's that streak's got to end at some point.
And, we're due, right?
I mean, and a lot of these guys are good enough. I mean, if a guy like Graham McDowell, I got it going this weekend, and again, I don't know enough about the intricacies of his game to know how well suited he is, although you've got him 15th on your list here. But if any of the guys that broke through the last couple of years, Martin Keimer, who you've got 18th, I mean, I don't think any of us would faint out of shock if that were the case. Yeah, I'm of the belief, Denker, it's got to happen sooner rather than later. We may not get 2 repeat winners this year, or a repeat winner in 2012. We may not get somebody that wins 2 of these things, but I would bet you we get a winner who's also won in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I would like that. You know, it kind of creates a little bit of a pecking order. You know, more guys with 2, you know, that's better. You know, hey, it creates a pecking order. Right now we got a lot of guys with 1, so it'd be nice to, let's start establishing some pecking order. You know, I'm all for that.
Absolutely. In our remaining handful of minutes that we have allotted to us here, Tom, let's take a look here. Just a quick overview. The rest of the year, as you see it, the remaining majors and then subsequently the Ryder Cup coming up. Who are some of the players you think, here's a little clip and save, who do you think have a good chance to be the standout golfers setting up for the rest of the summer here? I know it's early, but as far as how their games might correlate to the course conditions.
Well, you know, frankly, number one, you got to go with Woods. 2 of the courses, your British Open course this year, and the PGA, which is going to be a Kiawah Island, they're not really going to be the ones that are advantageous for your big bombers. So Woods, who's been really playing, keeping the ball on the fairway, taking advantage of his, you know, Woods' iron game is, right now it's him and then in a game full of ball strikers, his iron play right now is, it's still a, like he's an A and everyone else would be a B, and that's in the sport of, you know, the best iron guys. You know, right now it's just filthy. So, you know, in a game where he doesn't need to necessarily, if Tiger, in my opinion, gets let down, it would be with either on a Sunday, it would be with his driver. I think he could, you know, gut it around the greens. He might not put his mind out, but I think he could keep it together. But his iron play there. So I think that those are courses, you know, and even a point where the U.S. Open at the Olympic Club in San Francisco, it's got real goofy fairways, so the ball striking is going to become another, you know, premium. So I think that would help him. So I think guys that are, you know, the iron strikers, this might not be a year where, you know, the huge bombers, but, you know, the classic guys in the, you know, the majors are, it's kind of like a Quentin Tarantino or James Bond movie. You can only compare them to other Quentin Tarantino or James Bond movies. So the majors, mm-hmm. you know, that's really what I kind of see with them. You know, I think some of the guys, like Hunter Mahan, you know, he's always going to, you know, be putting himself in contention, a Bill Haas. You know, you look for the guys that are well-rounded, but I think some of the older guys, like a Mark Wilson, who's proven that he can win, and he's just filthy on the greens. Luke Donald's been number one in the world for a little bit of a while. It is very rare for a guy to be number one in the world, you know, and not take down a major. So, you know, if he's, you know, hobnobbing around and not getting, you know, he's, you know, he's number one player in the world, and, you know, at best he's fourth or fifth or sixth in a lot of people's master predictions. So a guy like him, you know, even though, you know, up until last year he was never really closer, but, you know, last year was last year, and he was clearly the best player in the world. You know, a guy with the game, really, in my opinion, has always been Nick Watney. He was, you know, pretty honest that he tried too hard in the majors and kind of got in his own way a little bit. So I think with working with Butch Harmon on the, you know, the tactical majors approach, that would be something that I would keep an eye out for. So, you know, a couple of those guys, I would always lean on the guys that are better putters, and not necessarily the longer guys for the majors. You know, the longer guys are going to contend, I think, have a better chance of contending, but the guys that are a little more steadier from all four parts of their game, putting, chipping, driving, iron play, you know, they're less likely to blow up. So, you know, I'll take a hot putter like Mark Wilson over a guy like Dustin Johnson. And one thing I wanted to add in with my Masters preview, those are guys that I had ranked in order, I think, of their likelihood to win. You know, a mm-hmm. guy like, you know, Charles Schwartzel, I think he's got a tremendous chance. I mean, you know, there's a real strain on, you know, trying to repeat. I definitely think he's going to do a good showing. I have him at 13. I think his overall game, you know, for the majors this year is much higher than that, but I just thought his chance of winning was a little lower. You know, like Ricky Fowler we had brought up earlier, I have him at 47. I think he's got a great chance of, you know, posting a top 20, but do I see him necessarily winning this week? No. So I wanted to throw out a couple of dark horses here for you so you sure. have him on record. Paul Laurie, he's a Scot. He had won in 99 in the Open when John Vandeveld collapsed. He kind of resurrected his game the last 18 months. He won earlier this year in Europe. I think if you're in a fantasy pool and you got to take guys that are way down the charts, keep an eye out for him. Jason Duffner of the United States, keep an eye out for him. You know, he's been showing really some life of late. Jeff Ogilvy, he's kind of dipped down into the world rankings down to 47, but he's really, first of all, he's grown an outstanding mustache, but he's really been focusing. I mean, I'm talking, it's like Tom Selleck, Kauai 5-0. It's very intimidating. I think it's going to help him. But he's really been trying to change his game a little bit, try to get ready for the Masters a little bit. And if a guy that you're kind of looking, another guy, if you're in a pool and they're just ranking guys by world rankings, which a lot of them do, Johnson Wagner, he was PGA Tour Player of the Month in January. If you go by PGA Tour points just this year, he'd be seventh. His world ranking is 63rd, and he's really a young player with a lot of confidence. Oddly enough, like Ogilvy, he's team mustache. He's rocking a strong mustache. And then my other guy, you know, after, you know, you have Tiger, Rory, Phil, I would say I like Keegan Bradley. He hits it long. He hits it straight. He hits it very high. And that allows you to bring the ball down into some tight places at Augusta. My prediction's on my preview, but I'm going to go with Woods. I think by the end of the year, Rory McIlroy is going to have a better year. But I think for one tournament, given the urgency, I think it's going to be Woods. I think he's just going to have too much urgency to get it done. I mean, we've seen this year, it's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with his body. So if he's feeling good, he's got to get it done. I think there's just going to be – we thought Tiger Woods had this drive. I think he's going to take it up even another notch between the years. You know, he's one of like three or four guys. He doesn't need to have his A game to win out there. I mean, he came with, you know, spit and Band-Aids holding his game together. And, you know, he hasn't done worse than six in 6 years. I think he's due. And well, I'm very skeptical. I think if he blows it, it's not going to be on the greens. I think he's going to get loose with the driver if he falls apart. But if you see him grimacing on Sunday, looking up at the sky, woe is me, I deserve that putt to miss, I would be worried. If he has a look of that, you know, that angry, you know what, I just got lipped out and I'm going to take it out on the ball in the next hole. If he has that look, I don't think there's going to be any doubt. I think he's going to walk it in. So, man, it's going to be good. You know, I think set the DVR to record, and this might be, you have to clear out some space. You may have to delete some of those, you know, college football games from last year and create some space on the DVR for this Masters. It's going to be a good one.
I think it is going to be, yeah, and it's coming at that really serendipitous moment in time, as we've been saying, Tom, no question about that. We'll be following along with you this week through the course of the week and the weekend here at Mr. Flatstick on Twitter, and I know that that is where subsequent developments in the Mr. Flatstick brand, that's where I know you'll be letting some things out when
yep,
the time comes here, and hopefully in the FDH Lounge as well, both on the blog and on our show here.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. I won't be, I won't bomb out anybody's Twitter timelines. I like to get some mileage out of when I do tweet. I don't like to clog anybody's timeline and keep looking for things. One last note is the weather. They're looking for storms on Thursday, Friday, so you could see the third round going into Saturday, and then maybe the third round, you know, the second round going into Saturday, and the third round going into Sunday morning. That's going to favor your a little bit longer guys, maybe guys whose iron play isn't up to snuff, but they might get helped out because they can't dry out, they can't change the characteristics of the greens mid-round. And, you know, that's going to be long days, so that's going to help the younger guys out a little bit. So just something to consider. But Saturday and Sunday are supposed to be glorious down there in Augusta. So have a great Easter.
Excellent. Excellent. The level of analysis we have come to expect from our good friend, Mr. Flatstick. Tom Denk, pleasure to have you on the show, as always, my friend. Look forward to doing it again as the course of the summer unfolds.
Wonderful.
Appreciate it, buddy. Mm-hmm. And thank you all for tuning in. Mini episode number 107 of the FDH Lounge.